Welcome to Whiskey Cask, Cask Strength Conversation, featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie. This is episode number 425 for May 19th, 2013. Coming up in a few minutes.
Mind you, sometimes we get very blasé when we kind of go into the warehouses and we pass whiskey casks and say, oh, there's one from the 60s, one from the 50s. You know, you just kind of take it for granted, but, you know, they are very, very rare.
That's the blasé Michael Urquhart, Managing Director of Gordon & MacPhail. He's just brought back the company's rare old range of vintage single malts. Many of the distilleries those malts came from closed 30 years ago this year. And we'll look back at that time with Michael later on Whiskey Cast In Depth. I'll also have the calendar of events, your voice, and the What I'm Tasting This Week department, all on this week's episode of Whiskey Cast.
Whiskey Cast. Proudly brought to you by Redbreast. The definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Join the stillhouse at singlepotstill.com and receive an exclusive whiskey tasting journal.
Let's start off with the week's news. It's brought to you by Glenmorangie. We've talked a lot about Amrut's role as India's first exported single malt whiskey, but there are two new expressions from John Distilleries in Goa, now available in the UK. John bottles its malts under the Paul John label, named for the company's chairman, and has released two single cask bottlings in the export market so far. Now, Brilliance and Edited will be getting much wider release through the Whiskey Exchange in the UK and distribution through Specialty Drinks Limited, which is the distribution arm of the Whiskey Exchange. Brilliance is the unpeated version, while Edited uses some casks of peated whiskey made with peat imported from Islay. Last time around, I mentioned the new names for three of Jura's single malts, but I forgot to mention a new travel retail release from Jura. Turris Mara remembers one of the bleaker times in Scottish history, when thousands of Scots from Jura and the Scottish mainland were exiled from their homeland during the clearances. It's made from four different types of casks, American, Spanish, French, and Portuguese oak, and is being bottled at 42% ABV. Meanwhile, Chivas Brothers is coming out with the latest in its series of Ballantine's Signature Distillery Expressions. This one is blended to highlight Milton Duff Distillery in Speyside, which is one of the four main fingerprint malts in Ballantine's 17-year-old. Similar versions honoring Scapa and Glenburgie distilleries were released a couple of years ago. The next release is expected to feature Glentauchers. The Milton Duff Signature Distillery expression will be available in limited quantities. For years now, Bushmills has been the only distillery in Northern Ireland. That's about to change. Last week, Nish Drinks was given planning approval for a new distillery in Londonderry, and now environmental permits have been approved for two more distillery projects. One will be a craft distillery located on a farm in Portaferry, and the other will be built in Kirkcubbon. Meanwhile, work is still underway on the Belfast Distillery Company's plans to convert part of the old Crumlin Road prison into a distillery. Sheep Dip and Pig's Nose whiskies will be getting more exposure in the UK market. Spencerfield Spirits is joining forces with Ian MacLeod Distillers for a distribution deal. The two blends have been chalking up double-digit sales increases in export markets, but sales have been lagging behind in the UK. Spencerfield's founder Alex Nicol is hoping that the deal to tap into Ian MacLeod's distribution network in the UK will turn that around. Finally, lots of people would love to get into Fort Knox. After all, the very real army post near Louisville is also the home of the repository for the U.S. government's gold reserves. But bourbon fans now have another reason to try to get into Fort Knox. The post's Sabre and Quill Club is now the first pub on a U.S. military base to have a room named for a whiskey brand. The club's Woodford Reserve Room opened up this week with barrels and memorabilia from the distillery. Technically, civilians could visit the club if they have a connection with someone stationed at Fort Knox. The gold vault, however, remains off limits. You can keep up with the latest whiskey news all week long at whiskeycast.com. But for now, that's the week's news.
The news is brought to you by Glenmorangie. Help us select the next Glenmorangie single malt whiskey with the Glenmorangie Caskmasters project. Sign up online through the Glenmorangie Facebook page or on glenmorangie.com.
Each month, I pick one listener at random from the people who've registered at WhiskeyCast.com to receive a free print from the WhiskeyCast photo gallery. Our winner for April is Marcin Kwasek of Warsaw, Poland, and I hope I'm pronouncing his name correctly. Congratulations, Marcin, and thanks for listening. I'll pick another winner at the end of this month. By the way, there is still time to take advantage of the Father's Day sale in the WhiskeyCast photo gallery. All prints are 15% off through Father's Day, June 16th. You'll find the gallery in the mall section of the pub at WhiskeyCast.com. This week's Your Voice segment is brought to you by Highland Park. I heard from Keith Raker of Chagrin Falls, Ohio this week. He has a question about traveling with whiskey. Here's what he had to say. My daughters and I will be traveling to Scotland this June, and my shopping list is growing. I was wondering if you could answer a question about bringing whiskey back into the States. Tax consequences aside, I'm happy to pay any duty due. I'm trying to figure out the mechanics of bringing 10 or more bottles home to Ohio. When traveling to Napa Valley, all of the wineries will sell you a styrofoam container meant to hold a dozen bottles, suitable for checked luggage with the airlines. Do the Scottish whiskey shops or distilleries offer a similar product? And do you have any experience carrying back this volume of whiskey? Given the treatment of my regular luggage on several international trips, I'm wary of checking glass bottles in the belly of the airplane. I would hate to collect all those bottles only to find them destroyed or missing upon my return. Your thoughts? Thank you as always. WhiskeyCast is a fantastic resource. Thank you, Keith. It's not as hard as you might imagine. I've never seen those styrofoam containers that you mention at any of the distillery shops in Scotland. Largely because most people generally don't buy a dozen bottles in any one distillery shop, but it really isn't as risky as you might think to pack whiskey bottles in your checked baggage. For some reason, it seems to me, and I could be wrong about this, but whiskey bottles seem to be made of thicker glass than most wine bottles, and that makes them a lot harder to break. Now, I usually wrap each bottle in clothing with a layer between any bottle and the sides of the suitcase, as well as making sure there's something in between the bottles and any other hard object inside the bag. You see, the real danger isn't from outside forces, but from the glass bottles banging into each other or something hard inside the bag as it's being moved. Now, for what it's worth, 3 years ago when I was on Isla for the Fagiel, I came home with about 15 or so full-size bottles and a bunch of sample-size bottles in two suitcases. Not only did all of those bottles make it home safely, but I've never had a whiskey bottle break inside a suitcase in all of my travel for WhiskeyCast over the years. Now, of course, I have just managed to jinx myself for the next time I hit the road. If there is something you'd like to share with whiskey lovers around the world, maybe your own tips on traveling with whiskey, you can always post it on the Your Voice page at WhiskeyCast.com or on our Facebook page. And, of course, you can also email me. My address is comments@WhiskeyCast.com. And this week's Your Voice is brought to you by Highland Park.
My name is Daryl Haldane, Global Brand Advocate for Highland Park. Go onto our website at highlandpark.co.uk and upload your photo at Inner Circle to have your face on the walls of the Highland Park Distillery.
Time now for the calendar of events brought to you as always by Laphroaig. Late notice on this one, but Jimmy Russell of Wild Turkey will be leading a tasting at Reserve 101 in Houston this Wednesday night. The Scotch Malt Whiskey Society's Australian chapter will have a tasting at the Royal Automobile Club in Sydney on Wednesday as well. And by the way, Australia's fourth Malt Whiskey Convention will be May 31st through June 2nd in Adelaide. The Isla Festival of Malt and Music gets underway this coming Saturday and runs through June 1st. The Good Spirits Company in Glasgow, Scotland will have a second birthday whiskey tasting May 31st. And Heather Green will lead a naked whiskey class at the Flatiron Room in New York City on June 4th. By the way, the naked part refers to the white whiskeys that'll be served. You'll find whiskey events from all over the world on the calendar at WhiskeyCast.com. The calendar is brought to you by Laphroaig. Take a virtual distillery tour at Laphroaig.com. And while you're there, become a friend of Laphroaig and claim your own square foot of Isla.
WhiskeyCast, brought to you by Redbreast. The definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. In conversation with Jerry McCarthy, stillhouse operator, Redbreast single pot still Irish whiskey.
There was a time, you know, we brought in 12 barrels, and I was asked to, I was foreman in the warehousing at the time, and it was to be handled by no one, and then myself and the supervisor in question, Dennis McSweeney. And we put it together, made it up. I was told to band them. strap them, get them onto the back of a lorry. They were being shipped off up to Dublin, and they were special. And I was told it was liquid gold. It was actually Redbreast.
Redbreast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Those in the know Redbreast.
WhiskeyCast In Depth is brought to you by Woodford Reserve. Gordon and MacPhail is responsible for hundreds of single cask releases every year, as well as the two oldest single malts ever bottled, the Generations Mortlach 70 in 2010 and the Generations Glenlivet 70 a year later. The family-owned company revived Ben Romick Distillery in Speyside a dozen or so years ago, and when I caught up with Managing Director Michael Urquhart last weekend in Toronto, we started talking about the latest Ben Romick release and went on from there.
Ben Romick is going from strength to strength. Volumes increased 40% throughout the world last year. And we're looking for similar levels of growth coming through in 2013. Wood finish-wise, we just released a port finish that's been matured for 8 years in port casks. Prior to that, it was in sherry and bourbon. It was distilled 2000, bottled 2013, so really nice, lovely red berry notes coming through. So that works incredibly well with Ben Romick. Gordon MacPhail wise, we've been continuing to go and evolve all our different brands. We've just released re-released the rare old range. So we've got things like Glenlochy, Glenugie, Glenruadh Royal, Port Ellen, St Magdalen, Glencraig, Mustowy, all coming in new packaging. So variety of ages, the Glenlochy's 79, Glenugie's 1970, Glenruadh Royal 84, Port Ellen 79, St Magdalen 75, Glencraig 75, and the Mustowy 79. The last two made with the Lohmann stills at Glenburgy and Milton Duff respectively. So really some interesting whiskies there. But, you know, it's hard when you guys keep on coming saying, what's new, Michael, what's new? We've bottled over 360 ranges. I'm sure you've not tried all of them yet, but maybe sometime soon you will.
And those are all dead soldiers in terms of being closed to distilleries, right, for the most part?
Yeah, that's why we put them under the rare old range. They're very rare and very old. Mind you, sometimes we get very blasé when we kind of go into the warehouses and we pass whisket casks and say, oh, there's one from the 60s, one from the 50s. You know, you just kind of take it for granted. But, you know, they are very, very rare. And that's where Gordon MacPhail has got a great library of whiskies and great, quite unique within the industry. Going back a long way. I'm not going to tell you how old because these old whiskies we will release under the Generations range. And if I go and tell you, you'll know when the next one is. So, there's lots of good whiskey out there and lots coming through. So watch this space.
I want to put this in perspective for a second because 2013 is an unusual year in that it's the 30th anniversary, really, of a lot of distilleries closing down. That big massacre we had with DCL shutting down Port Ellen, St. Magdalen, and a whole bunch of these places back in 1983. This is really a 30th anniversary of a really sad year for the whiskey business. And you were around back then. What does it mean 30 years later to know that we don't have a lot of those whiskeys left?
Well, the problem is 30-year-old whiskey is incredibly scarce. That's the big issue. But when you think about it, if you look back over the years, the whiskey industry has gone through kind of a rising tide. You get this kind of upturn, this boom period, and then it goes bust, and then you kind of fall off the edge of a cliff effectively. And what's happened was way back in the 70s, there was a overproduction in terms of what was actually being sold. But then the too much whiskey, so then there was a cutback. And, of course, you then had the revision of the amount of distilleries that were required, hence the great reduction. But just now we're going through a big renaissance again, coming through with lots of production coming through. And, you know, for a whiskey distiller, they don't have a magic ball. If they did, I would be crystal ball, that is. If they did, I'd be saying, can you tell me what the lottery numbers are for tonight's lottery? Because, yeah, it's just impossible. And one adage at one distiller, at a production director from a big distillery, I remember him saying, well, what I do is I take the marketing department's forecast, cut it in four and take off 10%. That's how much whiskey we make. you'll never get it right. We, Gordon McPhail, Ben Romick, what we tend to do is go and say, let's make as much as we can afford to go and make, because at least then you know you've done your best. And we're always laying down into good quality wood, so that then when the whiskey is bottled in the future, you know you're going to get a good whiskey out at the end of the maturation.
And it's not as though you have 15 or 20 distilleries. You have the one at Ben Romick that you're worried about, and you know that you've got kids and nephews and nieces that'll be running that place eventually.
Yeah, we want to remain a family independent business, and when you look at the business model, being a family business really kind of fits in with that long-term objective. When we are laying down whiskey, whether at Ben Romick or from the independent bottling side, we are taking a view of when we think we'll bottle it, so we match the type of cask, style of cask, that's going to match the style of the whiskey with that age of maturation. So some of the whiskies that we're filling today, I'll be dead and buried when they're bottled, but that's the philosophy we have. It was the philosophy my father and grandfather had before, and that way you can make sure that you've got whiskies, say 50, 60, 70, who knows, even maybe older in 50, 60, 70, or however many years in the future. You have to take that long-term vision.
Now, since you're one of the few people that's had the chance to actually taste whiskies from all those distilleries that closed in 82, 83 time period, if you had a magic time machine, which one would you go back and keep open?
How long do you want me to go on for? Just one? Oh, well.
Which one of all of them?
Well, Port Ellen is always one that kind of comes back, that people say, wow, what a great distillery, fantastic whiskey. Rosebank, another fantastic lowland whiskey. We won't see the likes of it again. There's just two that really were great. But if you look up even the Highlands, the three Inverness distilleries, all gone. And, you know, this is where, you know, the economics kind of comes in. All those distilleries in Inverness were in town centre. So at that time, they were saying, well, the value of the real estate was actually more than what the value of the whiskey they could get from the distilleries and go and sell. So that's always a problem that the whiskey industry has got, as you have societies, kind of towns kind of expanding out. And whilst the distilleries may have been in the countryside when they were built way back in the 1800s, that's now town centre. That's the other kind of challenging thing. So,
what worries you most with all these new distilleries that are cropping up around Scotland? Are you worried we're going to see another one of these whiskey locks build up?
Yeah, I don't think so. I think that when you look at the kind of the reason for the increase coming through, the new markets coming on stream, China, Taiwan keeps on booming. Then you've got India, Brazil, and there'll be other countries that will come through. Just as they get more affluence coming through, their economies start to perform better. You get people creating wealth, having wealth to go and afford these. And the one thing that comes through is people associate looking at the kind of premier brown spirit as being Scotch whiskey. It's a certificate, not quite a certificate, but it's almost like a standing and saying, you know, this is premier, this is really high quality. And that's where I think that, you know, just now there might be a bit of overproduction, one can never tell, but I hope not. And I think that you'll just see more and more demand coming through from these other markets throughout the world.
By the way, there is still no official timetable yet for the next generation's release. Michael hinted at having a few casks in their 60s in his warehouse. We'll just have to wait and see. That's this week's Whiskey Cast In Depth, brought to you by Woodford Reserve. Discover Woodford Reserve Double Oaked, uniquely matured in two separate new white oak barrels, the second deeply toasted and lightly charred for a more complex dimensional flavor. Find out more at woodfordreserve.com. Be double sure. Drink responsibly. Woodford Reserve Double Oaked, Kentucky Straight Bourbon Whiskey, 45.2% alcohol by volume. Woodford Reserve Distillery, Versailles, Kentucky. Let's start off the What I'm Tasting This Week department with one of the whiskies that will make its debut during the upcoming Islay Festival. Ardbeg's new Ardbog is 10 years old with a mix of ex-bourbon and ex-manzanilla wine casks, and it's bottled at a cask strength 52.1% ABV. The nose on my sample is smoky and salty with a touch of prosciutto, olives, and fresh bread baking in the oven. The taste reminds me of salt-cured bacon with touches of maple, smoke, heather, clove, and dark chocolate. And the finish is syrupy and long, a good balance of lingering brininess and smoke. I think it's a step up from last year's Ardbeg Galileo, and I'm giving Ardbog a 92. Now, the other day, I took part in a Twitter tasting for the Glenlivet Alpha, As I reported here a couple of weeks ago, Alpha has been released with no details on the cask or age, and in black bottles to conceal the color, at least until master distiller Alan Winchester gives us the story behind Alpha in an online webcast set for June 6th. Alpha is bottled at 50% ABV, and the nose reminds me of grilled pineapple, cedar chips, lemongrass, vanilla, and honey. The taste is thick, chewy, and very fruity with grilled pineapple, mango, and orange peel notes, along with honey, vanilla, and a touch of lemon underneath. And the fruitiness fades very, very slowly to reveal ginger and allspice touches, too. The finish is long with a subtle fruitiness, those pineapple mango notes, along with some passion fruit and coconut. It is a departure from the traditional Glenlivet style. I'm scoring Alpha a 93. And finally, John Hall of 40 Creek told us last week about his upcoming Heart of Gold whiskey that will be out this fall, with pre-orders online between May 27th and June 21st. He gave me a sample of Heart of Gold to try. It's bottled at 43% ABV, and the nose has notes of sandalwood, peach pits, vanilla, hazelnut, mild oak, honey, and a hint of flowers. The taste is subtle with good rye notes and a great mouthfeel, cinnamon and ginger spices, and touches of hazelnut, almond, and cedar, too. And the finish is long and slightly herbal as the spices fade. It's one of John's best. I'm giving 40 Creek Heart of Gold a 93. This coming week, I'll be tasting all four of the new 1824 series whiskeys from the Macallan, and you can find my searchable tasting notes for nearly 1,000 different whiskeys at WhiskeyCast.com. That's also where you'll find links for WhiskeyCast virtual tastings and WhiskeyCast HD episodes, the pub section with the calendar of events, news updates, your voice, and the mall featuring the WhiskeyCast photo gallery, and our bookstore powered by Amazon.com. Of course, you'll also find a complete archive of past episodes, too. The address is WhiskeyCast.com, and my email address for questions and suggestions is comments at WhiskeyCast.com.
WhiskeyCast. Proudly brought to you by Redbreast. The definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Join the stillhouse at singlepotstill.com and receive an exclusive whiskey tasting journal.
WhiskeyCast is a production of Cask Strength Media, copyright 2013, and comes to you from the charming, yet regrettably dry town of Haddonfield, New Jersey. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.